Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I am Craig Campbell, and I am an interrupter because we were about to get started, and I started talking right on top of Jess.
Well, I didn't give the thumbs up, is everybody ready thing before I started. I was barreling through, so.
But I am also... I'm having a day. I'm also the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And we are here with, I believe, second time around a guest, Coyote. Hello. Welcome.
Hi. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, thank you for coming back. Now, even though you're a repeat customer now on the show, could you tell us about yourself, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a freelance game designer, writer, editor, and also the program coordinator for the Curated Play program at Magpie Games.
Oh, what a coincidence. Our topic today is so relevant to what you do.
Serendipitous.
Yeah, today we're talking about curated play programs. And I think it's very obvious why we're talking about curated play programs. I don't even need Craig to introduce this to me. I would like you to tell me about this curated play program that you do with Magpie Games.
So the curated play program with Magpie Games is kind of the opportunity to have a professional GM who is very familiar with the system and who is experienced with, you know, managing all the players in the game, and who has a lot of experience, go ahead and run that game for you. So if you're somebody who's like a total beginner, but a game is really interesting to you, but you don't have a group of friends, or you would have some difficulty getting to your friendly local gaming store, our CPP program is awesome because all of it is online and it's all geared toward beginners.
So what is the difference between a curated play program and something like, I'm going to pull a random, just from an unpopular game no one's heard of, from D&D, we'll say, their Adventurers League program. What's the difference, or is there one?
There's way less restrictions on the curated play program. For example, I know that with D&D's program, you have to have certain things on your character sheet, or like it has to be approved through the rules of the program. The curated play program isn't like that at all. We invite you to come in, collaborate with your GM to make a character. And we also do specific timelines of games. So you might have a one shot, you might have a two shot that's scheduled for two different days. We go all the way up to 8 session campaigns. And I know that a lot of D&D's program is in person, and ours is at this time, and since the pandemic, strictly online.
All right.
It's my understanding as well with Adventurers League. It's kind of the model that you've thought of for living campaigns in the past, Living Greyhawk, Living City, all that stuff, where you have a character, you continue to play them from session to session. I mean, you can play different characters, but you can take a character first level and play over and over through all these different adventures, and they may not really have any sort of connectivity between any of them. You might come across adventures where there are sequels, you know, there are things that kind of tie together occasionally, but it's a lot more and disparate kind of stuff. Whereas it sounds like with curated play, it's curated. It's like a very specific thing. It's like, here, this is a one shot, or you can play in this thing where you're going to play this character for a very specific campaign that's 4 episodes. Again, I say episodes instead of sessions because I think in terms of TV, that's 4 sessions long or 8 sessions long that tells a complete story. Is that correct, Coyote, that these campaigns are more or less, there might be kind of mini stories within them, but they are more or less a full story?
Yeah, they're very self-contained in the length of the campaign.
So yeah, this is a world that's very... We've talked about like paid jamming before on the podcast, and I have some minor experience because back a long time ago I used to be a DM for Adventures League, so like a little bit of experience with that, but this is completely outside of my scope of experience. So let's talk about like what does a GM need to know for getting involved in such a program, or what does a player need to know too? Because I think that, I mean, one of the benefits of having a curated play program is you don't need to worry about having one of your friends, one of your buddies be the GM. We can all sit down and play.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the nicest things about it is the much memed difficulty that a lot of us have as TTRPG players, where we're trying to get a group together and all sit down at the same time and actually show up.
Right.
This program is an easier way to do that for a lot of people. As a GM, we do GM training for all of our GMs on the various games and systems. A lot of Magpie games have in the past been powered by the Apocalypse. Magpie Games is now using our own system, which is called Adana. And we have an awesome GM trainer named Louis Miguel, who takes the time every month to train GMs on new games, or if they're a new GM on some old games that they may have been interested in that are fan favorites. And one of the nicest things about this program for the GMs as well is that all of the profits from ticket sales go directly to the GM. So
That's really
tickets,
nice, yeah.
yeah. Tickets are like are $15 per session, and all of that goes to the GM. So that's a nice way to also keep them invested and to reward them for all of the hard work that they do.
It sounds, I mean, I would imagine that training your GMs is such an important part of a program like that. Because people are paying to have an experience. It's kind of like a like with a convention game, I'm not necessarily expecting to have like the most amazing time, right? I'm not expecting
Right.
I'm expecting some level of professionalism, but from like another gamer, I'm like they're not necessarily supposed to be, they should know the game, they should know they're a little bit, but I'm expecting mistakes. I'm expecting an amateur level, but when you're coming in, you're paying, even if it's only $15. When you're coming in and doing this, you're expecting probably a different kind of product, a different kind of service, maybe I should say, instead of a product. Yeah, and I can imagine that training program has to be, you know, has to, that has to be like a huge corner piece of any program like that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right, and I think that there are, D&D has the Adventures League. It also has the types of the types of games that get run at conventions. Like Baldwin Games runs a lot of stuff at conventions. Monte Cook Games has Cipher Play, which is kind of similar. It's like an in-store system, in-store game play system that is, akin to the Adventures League. But then there's, like a person who wants to become a GM applies, becomes a GM, runs stuff. And there's not necessarily with, and I'm not saying anything specifically about Adventurers League or Cypher Play and how they handle getting GMs and everything, but just for some of these types of game system or these types of organized play systems, there's, just find the GMs, get them in there and get them running. If there's a problem where like a GM is not really doing a great job, there's complaints about them for whatever reason, then you can always, kind of deal with that after the fact. The store or the organizers can deal with that in some way. Whereas like with curated play like this, it's upfront. Magpie is saying, we put our sort of our stamp of approval on these GMs. We've put them through their paces a little bit, and they're going to really provide you with a an excellent play experience. When I find myself when I organize getting GMs together for running games at Gen Con, for example, I don't necessarily go through those paces that Magpie does, but I do put a certain amount of time into like talking to the people and making sure like the people who are running the games, it's because they chose that that's the game they wanted to run. I didn't just shove something on them. And it's you know, I try to be a little bit pick and choosy to find people. And like once I've got somebody that like did a really good job one year, it's like I'm doing everything I can to get them back for Gen Con the next year. And there's a certain level of quality control, so to speak, that goes into
Yeah.
that sort of thing. But with with Magpie's system, Curated Play, and there may be other systems out there, other game companies that are doing something like this that I'm just not aware of, there's a higher level of kind of quality control from the get-go,
Yeah,
to make sure
absolutely.
that you're kind of preparing, you're giving, like there's you, ideally, hopefully, people are not going to be coming out of playing in one of these games, having any sort of issue with the game or how it was run or the GM. They may come out of it saying, well, that game isn't really for me. I played it and
Right,
I don't
yeah.
think I'll play it again, but they won't necessarily have a complaint about how it was put together and how it was run and the person who was running it.
Right.
Yeah.
And we Kate Bullock is our director of community relations, and she runs our Magpie also has community play days, which happen once a month, and they're free events. And a lot of our GMs get hired because they have worked with us in community play days before. So they have a history, they've got player recommendations, they've got recommendations from other GMs. So that's what we start out with before we even do any of the formal training or anything like that, is GMs who have a proven track record with us already.
Yeah, that's I mean that's important. If you are saying like they represent this person represents me and my company, you're gonna want to make sure that they're, you
Yeah,
know,
exactly.
different than a
Yeah.
convention. I could literally go into a convention and run whatever game I wanted to.
Yeah.
Does not matter. There's a program in Chicago called Wizard Staffing Co. It's a company, and I think that they do kind of similar things. But again, this is not like this is not Dungeons and Dragons saying here, put our stamp of approval on it. But it is sort of like this, like we have some GMs here. You're paying for a spot at this table. It's convention style with vetted
Yeah.
GMs. I know that that happens in Chicago. I think there's another one in Chicago too, but yeah, but I don't really play games in that way. I only play games in that way when I'm at a convention.
Right, yeah.
What are some differences that what are some differences for the GM side, just like looking from that, for a GM playing for a curated play program versus not?
So one of the big differences is pay. I mean, usually if you're GMing professionally, you know, you are getting paid for that, for your time, for the effort that you put into it. It's especially nice when you have a longer campaign. You're working with the same players repeatedly. It's an opportunity to sort of cultivate the intimacy of game playing with one another in a way that also controls the table size and has players who want to be there and who have invested something themselves in the game that you're all about to play. That makes a big difference for GMs, is that, you know, every player wanted to be at your table. They had to buy a ticket to get here. And we also have Discord channels and stuff for our GMs to talk to their players and coordinate like that too. So it's a lot more structured, I would say. You have, you know, you have some deadlines. You have a schedule that is very definitive. If a GM has an emergency or something, obviously there's some flexibility there. But I would say that it is definitely something that is a little more regimented than the usual play experience. And that is in as far as, you know, the GMs that I've spoken to, very beneficial to have that sort of certainty.
I can imagine how that might change how a player behaves. I've taught classes that are required for everyone to graduate versus classes that are electives. I know the differences in behaviors. However, I'm wondering what it would be like for the attitude of a GM, because a lot of GMs come into playing a game thinking, I am also a player. I am also here to have fun, and I am just as important as the rest of these people. Is it the same kind of philosophy?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that
Oh,
question? I
no.
just want to make sure that I understood it. That's okay.
Do you have that same philosophy when you're playing, when you're running a paid game like that? Do you consider yourself also to be a player, or is it different than when you would play non-paid?
I think that same sense of, we're all here for the same reason, and that I'm also kind of a player, I'm just playing from the opposite side, is definitely still there. Our GMs have a lot of fun. They get very immersed in the setting and the game as well. Most of them, if they're running a game, it's because they love that game. Helena Real, for example, she runs a lot of Urban Shadows games. She has worked on Urban Shadows in the past. So she's there for love of the game, in addition to the fact that she's there professionally. So I think you do still have that, but I do think there's also, when you have people who are paying to be there is a perhaps increased sense of responsibility toward curating that experience for your players. So yes, they definitely coexist. They exist in both spheres, but there's a little bit of a difference when you're, responsible on a professional level for the game that people are enjoying, and even in some cases being introduced to for the first time.
As a GM, you feel a little because of the way everything is organized and the time and effort that training staff put into and everything, there's a little more sense of responsibility on the part of the GMs.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, and it's worth noting that is going to attract certain types of GMs. Like this is not something that all GM types would necessarily find all that interesting. That if you are a GM who kind of like freewheels it, and it's like, like, hey, if we bone some stuff, we bone some stuff. That's, maybe not the right kind of GM GMing program for you to get involved in. But there's lots of different games, and there's lots of different organized play programs. So there's certainly probably one if you are list you if you listener would like to do something like get involved in one of these organized play programs, there's probably something that kind of jives with your style of how you want to kind of approach it.
And there's also a little bit of a spectrum too with what GMs offer, because some of our variables are like, are you going to use pre-gens? Will your players be coming in with here, you can pick from this array of possible characters, or will you be, comfortable making your own? So there is a little bit of a spectrum of like, how rigid do you want your play versus how flexible do you want to be?
That makes sense. I'm sorry. I feel like I was interviewing you there for a second, which is usually not what I do, but I am not. Like I said, this is not like.
No, you're totally fine. I just wanted to make sure that I was grasping the full question.
Absolutely. I had another question that came up when you were talking to me about running these kinds of games. Oh, I remember now. You said that, and I took a look too. I took a look at what Magpie has on offer right now. How is it decided? Because with Adventurers League, you have the list of games, you have a list of adventure paths, you go, you play them, you can kind of mix and match however you would like. With a lot of paid GMs that I know, they're hired specifically to run a campaign that people are asking with a system that they're asking. Well, Magpie Games, curated play program, it's all Magpie Games games. What do you do, how is it decided what is run and when?
That is largely up to the GMs. We do occasionally, like for example, we are kickstarting Fallen London right now, and we have a quick start available for it. So when we were doing the launch party for Fall in London, we were like, hey guys, can we get, Fall in London game submissions so that we have enough for everybody? We'll occasionally give that type of guidance if there's an event. Urban Shadows Second Edition just released. So we've got some more of that going on too. But for the most part, GMs are deciding what they want to run and also what is most profitable for them. So what do their players want to see? A lot of our GMs have their own Discord channels where they do this both for Magpie and for themselves, where sometimes they'll run non-Magpie games for players too. So some of them have a community already established, and an audience, that they can then decide, what is most important to them. Does my audience like playing Masks? Is that their favorite game? And maybe I'll run three games this month for that. So we do, occasionally ask, like, hey, if you're really in Urban Shadows or into Fallen in London, if you've completed the training, would you submit a few more games for that? We've got something going on. But for the most part, GMs are deciding what works for them and for players that they've played with in the past, and maybe for new players that they would like to attract in the future.
Makes sense.
I find myself wishing I could do something like this with Nürnberger Games, but I'm one
You
dude.
could.
Well, certainly not on the level that Magpie does, but there could perhaps be like some sort of hybrid version of it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've got enough people who like frequent the Discord, who are solid GMs, who have run stuff
Yes.
at conventions, that I could be like, hey, like I'm, and we'd maybe I don't know if scheduling, oh, scheduling would be the rough part, and kind of
It always is.
managing all of that. Like that's just another thing on that would be on my plate. It's one of the things that I'm sure Jess and your partner Alex and I run into, and anybody that's doing this kind of stuff on the side, it's like if I can only do so much stuff that isn't design and publishing, because if I
Exactly.
start doing too much other stuff, I don't design and publish.
Yes.
So it might be a game day where we say we're going to take a Saturday, let everybody know about it well in advance, and recruit specific GMs who I know multiple games inside and out, and say, hey, which games would you want to run? Kind of treat it how I do with Gen Con, because that's literally what I do with Gen Con. I get the GMs together and then I give them a list of what I'm looking for games to run, and I let everybody pick like first, second, third choices, and I try to give first choices if possible, second choices, and I've generally been able to do that. I've never had to ask somebody to run something that they didn't have an interest in. So maybe that's this that sort of thing is something I could do, and it could actually be, I'm not sure about how to like if it was all in one day, that wouldn't be so bad as far as managing the scheduling of stuff, because that could become like a whole other thing to have to handle, where I have to find somebody to do it, and then if I'm going to do that, I'm going to pay him for it, and or I do it myself, in which case I'm not designing and publishing as much. And then as far as whether or not they are pay to play kind of situation, I would personally have no issue with that. But I am also Nürnberger Games is not Magpie Games. It does not have the one, it doesn't have the resume and the reputation and the fan base of which would allow you to have a large enough segment of players who they are up for doing that. They're willing to, spend some money to do it.
Oh, that's why so many of these curated play programs or things that are similar to them. Well, Magpie Games is a big enough, Craig, you were saying. But it's why a lot of people who are paid GMs are specifically playing Dungeons and Dragons. It has a huge demand. A lot of people are familiar with it. A lot of people want to play it. I think that has a lot to do with it. And then also the other side of it being that it's kind of a difficult game to run. However, I wouldn't say that a lot of Magpie Games games are difficult to run there. I mean, a lot of them are very easy on the GM in terms of like what you're doing. So like that's a nice thing. But yeah, you have to have like a certain amount of like a like attention spotlight audience
which is very rare in the indie game space. However, there are lots of us in the indie game space, and there are a lot of people who want to play indie games. I never have a hard time selling out my games when I'm at a convention.
And Craig, I was going to say your Discord is very active too. I feel like if you did something like, even if you just started as like a one-time thing as an experiment, did a community play day like we do, like something like that, just to get a feel for what would this entail if we just did one day that all the GMs run, we're not doing a bunch of scheduling, whatever. I think that might be a good way to sort of, wade into the water to see what that would look like, what it would feel like if it's something that you want to continue with.
Or collaborating with a few other groups too, to do something
That
like that.
could be. I've done that where I had like Nerdburger Con online, did that 2 times and brought in people to run, just kind of reached out to the people I know who have designed games and brought people in to run stuff. And the organization of that wasn't it took some work, but it wasn't overwhelming. And that was like a Saturday. It was like a Friday night, Saturday and Sunday kind of thing. And it took, it was months and months of preparation, but it was in dribs and drabs. Like a once a month thing where it's just like, okay, we throw this pile of GMs into the room with a bunch of players that want to try the games that they're running. And bring in Jess or Alex to run, Moonpunk or something, or Means of Magic, and bring in somebody to run something from one of the other, whether it's from Imagining Games or from Wet Ink Games or whoever, the people that are kind of in my circle that I see and talk to quite a lot, and who also participate in the Discord, which would help. Like they'll be like, oh, this person's in the Discord, they've talked about stuff, which I think would instill a bit of trust among the players who were going to take a shot at it. Like I would be kind of vetting people that I know, or vetting people to vet people so that we all feel
Exactly.
comfortable. The point being that like everybody comes into it feeling like, okay, this has got the Craig Campbell seal of approval or whatever. Like this is like I haven't just plucked people out of the ether. We've actually found, some GMs who are really solid and who know these games inside and out. They chose to run this system, this game. So you're getting, hopefully a very good experience. So now you've got me thinking about this. Thanks a lot, you two. I'll have to give it some thought. That might be a nice thing, like to test run one time this year, and if it goes well, maybe it becomes a 10-year anniversary kickoff kind of thing,
you go. See?
and I can tie it into that and make it kind of a big deal.
And like you have some advantages there too, because your GMs consistently I hear good things about. Like when we were at Gen Con last year, everybody was talking about how awesome the GMs were and how much fun that they had playing your game. So I think you already have a good base and you don't have to pluck them out of the ether. Instead, you could pluck them out of the aether space.
Wah, wah. That is poking at a game that is in development, that's in playtesting, that's close to being done, that's going to get kickstarted hopefully this fall. That's Cosmic Corsairs, which is, oh, space pirates fighting an evil space regime.
Certainly
because
not our dystopian future.
Coyote just found out earlier this week, like a couple days ago, that I you're gonna be doing what?
Editing.
Editing the
Yeah,
book. I had to confirm
I
that I had to confirm that Coyote was available around the time that I was gonna start doing that.
am number one, always available for anything that you have for me, Craig.
Oh.
But also, I do keep an eye on your Discord. I just don't interact much because Discord is very, I find it like for work is one thing for me, but like if I'm doing it on a personal, like I'm just gonna get on Discord, it can be very overwhelming because everything happens so fast. And it's like if you miss something, then you've gotta like try to scroll back while there's 50 people still talking.
There can be five conversations happening all at once, and people aren't replying to previous comments. So you don't know what they're responding to. Like somebody might be responding today to somebody saying something yesterday.
Exactly.
And it's 20 comments up the screen. Yeah. I'm there with you. That can be a little rough, but.
But I do keep
the solution to that is more channels, which isn't great either.
No. More boxes.
I mean, it's really hard though too to build up a community like that. I don't, on all the Discords I'm on, the only one I'm like super active on is the IDDN one. I post in a few of the other ones. IDDN and then my local game store that my buddies run. It's not a game store, it's a manga and comic store that also does games. Those are the only two, because I just like, I'll look at some messages from time to time, I'll see what's going on, I'll check it in, but I've really been reducing my social media usage since 2 years ago. So yeah. But building up something like that from the community creators, community curator, community curator side. That's tough. That's tough work. And it's a lot of work. I feel like it's such an important step if you're going to do a program like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this program kind of started during the pandemic, because we also have the Corvid Collective, which is, at Gen Con, they run a lot of games too. And sometimes they run them at their friendly local gaming stores. But that is a much smaller, more disparate program. Mm-hmm. This really took off the curated play program as it exists now in an online capacity, took off during the pandemic, and also happened to coincide with when we released Avatar, The Last Airbender, Avatar Legends RPG. Mm-hmm. So at one time in its heyday, when nobody could leave the house and we had this huge new property, we were having something like 200 games a month.
Wow.
Which is a tremendous amount to keep track of, and was wonderful. It was awesome to see how many people were really invested in that property and passionate about it. And not only that, but how many of them were willing to like try out other things once they realized that they really liked what we did with Avatar.
Yeah, that makes sense. I take it that it has slowed down since then.
Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, that was a lot. And now we have the, arguable advantage of we can leave our homes now. And... we can arguably we can, some of us can, interact with people face to face now. And so a lot of those gaming groups have come back, but we still see a lot of people who really enjoy being able to do this from the comfort of their home, in their pajamas with all of their creature comforts around them, without the stress of, now I have to drive somewhere. Because I know that when I go to in-person games, we're running, like 4 to 8 hours.
Right.
So, and we're adults. So it's like, we're doing this at, we start at 8 p.m. and, I'm not leaving until 4 in the morning. You don't have to worry about that because you're already home.
Right. And
that's an aspect of it that I personally really enjoy.
No, I feel like that is an aspect a lot of people enjoy. I like an in-person game for my own reasons, but I definitely can appreciate why people would want to stay at home. I can definitely appreciate that. Have my crochet on my lap.
Exactly. I'm doing literally the same thing, crochet.
Yeah.
Can I take a little side diversion here to remark that you managed to do what Mark Diaz Truman does every time I talk to him, which is at some point talk about Avatar and how it has impacted Magpie. Because every time I run into Mark Diaz Truman at a convention, at some point in the conversation, I've tracked Avatar in Magpie by talking to Mark Diaz Truman, where he talks about like he was in, we're, you know, we're getting ready, or we just finished kickstarting Avatar. And it's like, and this is how Magpie is because of that. And then I talked to him later. He's like, we're still working on Avatar, and this is how Magpie is because of that. And then I talked to him later, and I ran into him at Gamma, and he was like, we're finally catching our breath after Avatar. So
funny. That is so funny.
Yeah. It was such a pivotal moment for the company.
It's wild. It's because it was such a significant business move and a significant thing to happen for Magpie. It was something like pursuing a license like that was many years in the making, and it paid off. But then I also got this like weird snippet of like every time I talk to Mark, I get this little behind the scenes of like, ooh, yeah, that's got to be, and it makes me, I'll say this, and Mark, if you ever listen to this, Coyote, whenever you talk to him, maybe I'll remember to mention it to him at Gen Con if I see him. It makes me never want to get a license for a game, to license a property for a game, even if it was just like some little thing that was actually sort of doable by a little company like mine, because and I know a few different people who have, even on the smaller, you know, game size, like, you know, Imagining Games does the Chew game, which is, and Imagining Games is Pete, along with all freelancers and people that he has involved. And that had to be like one hell of a process of managing whole thing.
It's so much work, and it's so many moving parts. There are, don't get me wrong, I love the licenses that we have. I am so excited that we've got Fall in London right now, and we're going to be working on it and everything like that. That being said, it is so many moving pieces. And luckily Magpie has, you know, a few staff members to do that. Val is one of them. Yeah. Val works with our licenses. She's amazing. I was going to ask, does Mark look a little bit older every time you see him, and a little more tired?
Okay. I'm going to qualify this. Oh God, I can't believe you said this. I'm going to qualify this. Mark, you're a beautiful man.
He is.
But I was at Gamma Expo, which is a trade show. So it wasn't like players and stuff. It was retailers and distributors and publishers and so forth, creators and media. And I was talking to a random person that we just sat down next to each other and started talking. And I was looking across, I was in the hotel, and I was looking across, and I was like, is that Mark? And I explained to this person, who first time there pitching his board game, didn't have any idea who Mark Diaz Truman was. I was like, yeah, that's Mark. Like every time I see Mark, he's a little grayer. Yeah. And his beard is a little different.
Right, his flowing.
He lets it grow, and then and sometimes I catch him when he's just trimmed it up a little bit to tidy it up, and like, so there's like, I've seen this progression of Mark. If I had taken a photo of him against like a white background every time I saw him in the last 4 years, I could do like a flip book, and you'd see like this little change, because you know, I mean. And I'm no different. I mean, I'm graying more and more every year. And
but it's like when you know, when a president starts their term versus when they
finish it. A little more frazzled.
Yeah.
To also be fair, we only see these people a couple times a year.
Well, that's kind of the point. Is I've made this personal observation inside my head about a number of people, and I'm sure that if I looked at photos of myself over the course of the past 5-6 years, that you can absolutely see that too. A little more wrinkles, a little thinner on top.
You know, my hair not for me though.
It has been slow. Oh no, Jess's
hair. I have this portrait that I keep in my attic.
You time walked.
Well, I maybe only cut my hair once a year. So it grows out, and then I'll chop it off dramatically, and then I'll let it grow out for another year. It's about time for another
hair. But it's not my job to point it out, so I didn't.
Well, if you don't point it out, how am I going to know it's time to cut my hair?
Oh, because I'm the bellwether for too long of hair.
We discussed this at our first meeting, Craig.
Jess goes home all upset, talks to Alex. Craig said my hair was getting long. I'm so upset. I'm going to chop it off right now.
It's on your list of like job responsibilities.
Yeah, it's in my writer for this podcast.
When Jess, exactly, when Jess and I started the podcast, we split the responsibilities, you know, and I do the scheduling and Jess does the editing, and I also tell her when she has to cut her hair. It's literally in the contract.
Obviously.
That we didn't sign.
Green M&Ms only. And
yeah, of course. They taste different.
They do.
In there so I know that you read my writer.
Yeah, right. That's the story, right? Van Halen with all the brown M&Ms taken out.
Yeah.
For anybody listening who doesn't know, Van Halen, the band, had all bands and music groups and everything have a writer for what they want backstage at the venue. And Van Halen famously, even early on, had in their writer, you know, like a certain number of ounces of M&Ms in a bowl with all the brown ones removed. And it wasn't because they were weird and needed the brown ones removed, because they all taste the same. It was because if the brown ones were removed, they could be reasonably certain that the venue had read the entire rider.
And they were really dedicated to Van Halen.
And they really love Van Halen. And
I would have read that and been like, no.
I imagine there was plenty of people read that rider and read the whole thing, did their due diligence and read the whole thing, but then didn't. Like, I'm not screwing around with them.
It's just like, who
does Eddie think he is?
Eddie. Dave can pick out his own damn M&Ms.
There's just like one groupie in the corner sobbing as they separate all the M&Ms.
What poor stagehand had to help pick out the brown M&Ms when the venue didn't do it for them, because there was somebody in the band who was that picky.
Well, there's a game for you. You're the poor roadies. You're the poor.
I know what you're saying, and I'm sorry I got excited because I was like, you could do something like that in the same style as like Papers, Please.
Yes. I would play that game. I'd play any Papers,
100%.
Please.
Yes, anything that's like resource management and yeah.
I have a rock and roll game that I'm working on, but it's not about roadies. Sorry.
Aww.
Oh, jeez.
Is it about the music?
You immediately took our dreams and dashed their brains.
No, it's done. I mean, it's not done. It's written enough to be able to playtest, and I just haven't playtested it for 6 months because I've had so much other stuff going on. One of these days, I'll actually get some people together and playtest it. It's called Heavy Metal Saves the World.
Nice.
And it's about, you play, it's like a little, you know, it'll be like a little zine sized game, like the size of Low Stakes or something like that. And you are a GM-less game where you are all heavy metal musicians from the 80s who take down a James Bond style villain through the power of rock and roll. And your traits are sex, drugs, rock and roll.
This is what I've always wanted.
I can send you a copy if you want to read it. It's just two pages of bullet points.
Too many games, Craig.
Send it.
I have too many games. That's one's actually publishable. There, you know, like that could, I could finish that one. There are other games that I've written that are up on a shelf that I don't know that I'll return to them for one reason or another.
We have flown off topic.
That's okay.
It is okay. This is all part of the process. As you know, curated play and rock and roll interlinked. Totally interlinked. Coyote, do you have anything else that you haven't had a chance to say about curated play that you wanted to tell us about?
I'm sure that if there was, it's left my mind. But I will say that the things that I always think about when it comes to our program is just how much fun it is. I mean, this is one of the things that I really love about my job, is that I am, you know, a part of this program that gets to lovingly and carefully create an experience for somebody. It especially, you know, like, has my heart when it's somebody who's playing for the first time, who was just like, hey, I saw this and it looked really interesting, but I've never played before. I get a lot of those emails of people who are like, is it okay if I don't know anything about it? Is it okay? I get some inquiring about, like, I have a disability, can it be accommodated? And as a, disabled creator and player myself, what makes me really happy about our program is its accessibility. Even if you don't have a working video camera, there are games for you where voice is totally fine. All of our GMs are experienced working with people who have varying support needs. And it is a very personable group of people that we have where you can, as a player, feel comfortable asking your GM, hey, is this okay? Is that okay? And you're going to get an enthusiastic response because they're all really excited to be there and doing what they're doing. And I can't say that about every endeavor that I've been a part of where like everybody actually is like, let's do it. Let's get out there. We have a whole channel for like GMs to talk about their experiences and their players. And it's just always so nice to see that feedback from both players and GMs of like, this is how I had fun today. And that's lovely. And I really love that part of the job.
It sounds like a nice gig.
It really is. Does. I'm very lucky.
Coyote, where can we learn more about you and your stuff and the things you want to show off?
Well, I do have a Patreon that is under Coyote Crow. It's just patreon.com/coyotecrow. I write microfiction every week. Usually it's horror or something adjacent. But there's also been some different types of stories there. There's almost 100 stories on there currently, and the vast majority of them are free. So even if you don't subscribe for $5 a month, there is plenty for you to read through and enjoy, hopefully. other than that, I am on Magpie Games' website. You can come look at my picture with my title underneath it.
Bring the picture up while you're listening to this episode, and you can imagine
not the coyote is talking to you. Website. But yeah, Patreon is the big place. Social media, I'm under either Coyote Crow or Rider Coyote. I'm on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, etc.
Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk about this. This is a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Joska. You can also find my games on Itch and on DriveThruRPG under Wannabe Games. And yeah, that's it for me.
You can find me at Nerdburger Craig on a number of social media outlets, but not Twitter. Screw that noise. And that's just me. I just anyway.
I'm off it now. So
yeah, I stopped using it a while ago, and then I fully just like deleted my account completely. My website is nerdburgergames.com, and the games are at DriveThruRPG. And there's a card game coming called Slay to Win that is a an occasionally cooperative role playing and monster hunting card game that I'm looking at. Proof copies right now, and I've got
that's gonna I have be a Kickstarter, right?
That's gonna be on Kickstarter in the next month or two. I'm going to be actually meeting with my graphic designer tomorrow to go over all the final tweaks that need to happen.
Sometimes you can find me at Gen Con sitting next to Craig yelling compliments at people long after they've passed our booth.
That was a thing that happened last year.
Drive-by compliments. Everyone loves them. thank you to Steph Sachs for our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs, and thank all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.